Our next guest is a photographer and a tramper and an occasional climber. Peter Lawrenson has spent 3 decades documenting his outdoor adventures. And he's just published Aotearoa Light, a beautiful coffee table photography book. It is both a celebration of the beauty of our backyard and a reminder that we do need to protect it. And Peter is with us now from Richmond near Whakatū. Nelson, kia ora, how are you?
Yeah, kia ora, Susie.
Lovely to have you with us. You are a big adventurer. You love getting out into the wild, a big advocate of that. Why is that so important to you?
Well, for me, it's a way to really appreciate the gift that I've been given, which is my life. Getting out into the natural world, for me, allows me to take time to think about things more clearly, to get away from the clutter of our everyday, and just to appreciate what we actually have around us.
Being away from the clutter, do you think being able to have that sort of clarity in your mind is one of the reasons that you are able to do your best work, the pictures?
Yeah, I mean, the place that I'm in, the wilderness, is what I'm focusing on. So, if I wasn't there, I wouldn't be taking the photographs, because they really capture my imagination, and I really want to try and bring that back to share with people and to do justice to it.
Tell me about the light that you see when you're out in the wilderness, because I think we're very lucky in this country with the way that the light falls. It's kind of magic, I always think, the light at the edges of the day, the dawn and the dusk.
Yep, landscape photographers call it the magic hours for good reason. And in New Zealand, we do have a particularly clear light to do with having a relatively low population, also being geographically isolated from other big industrial nations. So, yeah, the light physically is a special thing, but it also it's when the magic happens in landscapes, when the light plays on ridge lines and captures the folds and the snow and the ice and that sort of thing.
With digital photography, because a lot of the pictures in the book, which we'll talk about more in just a moment, a lot of the pictures in the book are panoramas. Has digital photography kind of changed the game around how you can take panoramas because, I suppose, of some of the technical aspects that you can do in sort of post-production side of things?
Yeah, absolutely. The masters always did things in their dark rooms, and they post-processed. But in the digital world, the tools are more diverse, and they're easier to be able to access. You can do amazing things post-processing in Photoshop or Lightroom or whatever software you choose to use. And I think that it probably is easier and more accessible than it used to be. But there's still an awful lot of skill in it, because you have to know, when enough is enough, and you need to know how to use these tools to convey what you're trying to convey. For me, when I take photos, I'm not trying to just document facts. What I'm really trying to do is capture what motivated me and inspired me to take the photo. So that's a bit different from just simply cataloguing facts.
So what is your motivation?
Well, it's to do justice to an absolutely magnificent place called our wilderness, our nature.
Now, the book itself, Aotearoa Light, is not just a stunner coffee table book, although it is a stunner coffee table book.
Thank you.
You are, it's really, really beautiful. And it's, I guess, from your perspective, what is the value of having photographs like yours in print, so you can actually feel them and touch them as well as look at them?
Well, maybe call me old school, but there's nothing like having images printed really to a high quality that you can sit in a cozy chair and enjoy with a hot cuppa or something. It's different from scrolling down a screen or flipping pages on a screen. Yeah, the printed word and the printed image are still something I think that it's a beautiful thing to enjoy.
As you say, we do live in a country that has the most extraordinary wilderness areas, beautiful backyard. But a reminder, running right through the book, about how we actually have to protect what is there if we want to keep it. We can't just take this for granted, can we?
Absolutely not. The science that's unfolding now tells us unequivocally that we're facing human-induced climate warming, and it's going to have, well, it's already having a serious impact on us, but not only us, all the myriad other species that make up our biosphere. So we absolutely cannot be complacent. And what I'm hoping with Aotearoa Light is that by showcasing some of the really beautiful elements of our natural wilderness, it reminds us what we have to lose. Images, photographs can tell a story, and I want my photos to help to do that, to get people to stop and think, because really it is up to us to make the right choices as we move forward. In order to make sure that what people look at in those pages can still be around for future generations.
Yeah, have you seen, I suppose, firsthand from your time spent out in the bush, some of the impacts from global warming? Are we able to kind of catalogue that in our own lives, across a couple of decades?
Yeah, I think anecdotally you can. As an individual, I'm one tiny pinprick in an almost infinite environment. So I can talk about experiences I've had and say, ah, there you go, there's an example of global warming. And I think in some cases it is. For example, travelling on glacial moraine now, and getting into particularly into the Ōrākei Mount Cook area, it's becoming more dangerous, and the access is becoming more difficult because we're seeing glacial decline. So the ice is melting, and also the permafrost is melting as well. So that's unlocking the landscape, and it's falling apart. So it's more dangerous, and the access can be more difficult. But that's me. That's climbers that go into the outdoors. The most compelling thing I think is the science, which is looking at the overall picture, and people sometimes say that, oh, there's always been warming and cooling events that have happened throughout Earth's history, and they're absolutely right. But the thing that is so different at the moment is the speed that our planet is warming. What's happening in the last century with our massive consumption of fossil fuels and the consequent CO2 building up in the atmosphere. It's happening in 100 years, and this is the sort of thing that would normally happen over tens of thousands or even millions of years. And that's the problem, because our environment hasn't got the chance to keep up, and many of the species that are now dying, 150 species per day are dying, because they can't keep up and adapt with this rapid change.
Yeah, tourism and the impact of tourism is kind of an ongoing quarrel, I guess, in this country, not just this country, but around the world, I guess. And you did a lot of travelling, as so many people did when you were younger, which has shaped who you are and how you approach your work. But then this does come at a cost to the environment too. Are we able to have it both ways?
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it? I was a very active backpacker back in the late 80s into the 90s, doing my OE. And back then, global warming and the carbon footprint weren't really a thing at all. We didn't understand it, but I certainly do now. And I look back and realise that what I did had a big carbon footprint. I feel some regret for that, but I say in my book that I wouldn't want to forego those adventures. They were so amazing. So the answer isn't sort of black and white. It's by degrees. I don't say that people don't travel at all anymore. I mean, I'd be a hypocrite if I did, for one thing. And I know that international travel is a wonderful thing for people to do. But what we do need to do is to stop and think and understand what the implications of our actions are. So rather than having gratuitous international holidays to Fiji or the Gold Coast a couple of times a year, maybe think, well, maybe we don't need to do that. We've actually got a fantastic backyard here in our own country, for one thing. And if we are going to travel to a place and spend longer there and don't travel as frequently, that's one way of illustrating how you can still do things that have a carbon footprint, but we can have less a lower impact while doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good advice, I think. Certainly is. And the book as well, it's dedicated to the late Sean Barnett, who was a really good friend of yours, and some of our RNZ listeners may well be familiar with him and his work. He's been on RNZ quite a few times. He was quite the mentor to you, really, wasn't he, in the sustainability area particularly?
Absolutely. Yeah, I was fortunate to get to know Sean about eight or so years ago. I wish that it had been longer. Sean was about 7 years my junior in age, but his knowledge of the backcountry and his overarching philosophy on life were really, really wonderful. And I tapped into that. We had many opportunities up on ridgetops, bivvying under the stars, sometimes sharing tents. We shared many magic hours, dawns and dusks, and many, many great conversations. And I think my own understanding of the importance of, well, the absolute essential need for us to put both environment and social considerations at an equal footing with economic and financial ones, that became really clear through my discussions with Sean. I've said in my book that to me, Sean was a personification of the union of the best aspects of humanity and wilderness. And I certainly believe that.
Well, it is wonderful to hear you talk about him, and it is wonderful to look at your book. Thank you so much, Peter Lawrenson, for coming on Saturday morning to tell us about it. Aotearoa Lights is the book we've been talking about. A really, really beautiful, stunning photography book. Beautiful on your coffee table, but some fantastic images in there. A reminder of what is out there in the motu for us all.